Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Cosmos with Cosmos. I'm Liz.
I'm Mike.
And we're talking about space junk.
Space junk.
We've got a lot of junk in our trunk as a planet, as a species. And we've put some out there in space, so we're going to talk about that. But first, we got to talk about what we're drinking.
What are we drinking?
Since it is a Cosmos with Cosmos, even though we never have Cosmos.
We really, like I said before, we should do that once.
Well, I'm drinking, Mike and I are drinking the same thing, but we have different names for it because we like to just make up our own drink names. But this, formerly known as a Galaxy Mule, but I'm calling it Junk in the Trunk. And Mike is calling his the
Kessler Syndrome.
And it is...
yours looks so much better than mine.
Yours looks great.
No, the purple. Yours the purple.
Well, okay. It is a Butterfly PT.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And P spelled P-A-E.
Yeah.
And it's a tea from Thailand that you gotta order online. Mixed with... it's vodka. I have cherry vodka.
We both have cherry vodka. So.
Okay. Ginger beer, lemon juice, which makes the blue tea turn purplish, and then we have the tea frozen in ice cubes.
Yeah. So when the Butterfly PT has the great attribute of when it is in an acidic pH, it will turn purple.
Oh, I need a straw.
So. There you go. And so it'll change color on you. So what you do is you put Butterfly PT ice in the bottom. Shredded ice. What is it?
Crushed ice
in the bottom, and you pour the mix all on top of it, and then you put the blue ice cubes. It's a beautiful blue color.
It's beautiful.
So cheers, everybody.
Oh, shit. Naturally, of course. Naturally, Davison spilling all over the place, forgetting how physics works. Katie, you're funny. I see your comment, Katie, and it was funny. Oh, I got it on your, spilled it on your iPad. It's fine. Anyway. So those are our drinks. That's what we are.
We have eight iPads.
That's what we're drinking. Follow us on all the things at Drinking Cosmos on Twitter and Cosmos with Cosmos everywhere else. Listen to the podcast on Spotify, whatever your favorite podcast platform is, Apple, Google, what have you. We got short, bite-sized morsels of science called The Shot. With Cosmos that comes out every other Wednesday on YouTube and on the podcast platform. So you can check that out if you want just a little brief moment of fun, drunken science for you. Also,
3 minutes or less of fun.
It's super fun. And we need a spill compilation.
We do. That would be funny,
just
actually.
All the spills. Oh, Jesus. Anyway. And buy some really great artwork from not him.
Wildixia,
aka Katie Wildixia on Etsy. Search Wildixia, IXIA. And then check out our good friend Ron Proctor's YouTube channel. He does some cool shit. A link to that will be in the description. I don't know how do YouTube videos work. Anyway, all right, we do have some rules to the show. If you hear any dogs barking, take a drink. And if we make any nerdy Lord of the Rings or Star Wars references, not Star Trek, Star Wars, because Star Trek would be difficult. Star Wars references. Also, take a drink.
And if I cough, take a drink.
And if, like, every time, no, God, it's too many drinks.
What?
The amount of times you're going to cough.
I almost did it just in. So if I cough, take a drink, because... Oh, we'll see how far I
get. Okay. Anyway, space junk.
Space junk.
Space junk. Space debris. Orbital debris. It's
space
just,
junk.
It's basically shit that we've sent off into space. Artificial stuff. Man-made things we've launched out there that's either broken apart or it's defunct and useless. It's not being used. It's basically trash now. It's basically trash that's just floating around out there or hanging out. Out there on various bodies that we'll get into. Now, I found this this quote from Alice Gorman. She's a space archaeologist. By the way, can we talk about the profession space archaeologist?
That is really cool.
Because at what point does junk become like
an artifact?
Like, you know, like at what point does, like, I don't know, ancient pharaoh tissues, you know, become an artifact, like an important thing that people would pay thousands of dollars for,
just pharaoh snot. I think it's different for like space stuff though. I think when like the Apollo astronauts left the moon, mm-hmm. they immediately became artifacts.
Okay. Well, we'll talk about that a little bit later. All right. But, her quote is, litter is things that have been discarded, like confectionery wrappers in a national park, but that's not true of anything in space, which has all been very carefully planned, and mostly it's for scientific purposes. Mm-hmm. So that's an interesting perspective on it. But I would say that there are things that have happened, say, accidental collisions that aren't necessarily planned and creating debris that is out there. So speaking of which, we will then start the space junk with our own home planet and the debris in orbit around the Earth.
I mean, we've polluted the Earth. Why not just go?
Why not? Yeah.
Let's just go to the next place.
You know, it makes sense. We just leave our shit hanging around.
Yeah,
we don't need it anymore. Oh, whatever. It's out of everybody's hair. Yeah. You know, swept above the rug, if you will.
Except sweeping it, like, above our heads.
Way above the rug.
And some of that stuff's going to come down.
So, humanity has launched about over 12,000 satellites since the dawn of the space age in 1957.
Nice. That's a lot.
You don't think about how much stuff actually gets launched up there. Yeah. You know, like,
how much is working though? Of that 12,000.
How much is working?
Yeah, how much is still working?
About 4,700.
See, I set you up there.
Okay, thank you. I was like, is that coming up next in the notes? I don't know. I have to look down. Thank you, Katie. Katie appreciates me. She gets a drink. And 7,600 basically remain in orbit, and out of those, it's 4,700 that's still operational.
Okay.
So that, I mean,
so about 5,000, you know, has already come down.
Yeah, a lot has already come down. The oldest is Vanguard 1. This was launched in 1958, a second U.S. satellite ever launched. It will burn up in the Earth's atmosphere in about 300 years.
Yeah, I'm giving it to our grandkids.
Yeah, here you go. Surprise!
Yeah.
Oh, look at all the shooting stars, Mama! Spacecraft. That's just our pollution coming right back. Coming right back down to us.
It was 10 generations ago trying to kill you.
Yeah, I mean, that's crazy that it's just... That's how long it's going to take for its orbit to decay enough for it to re-enter the atmosphere.
Must be pretty high up.
High up and going pretty fast.
Oh, is that what it is?
I don't know.
Yeah, well, I mean, I would say, let's see, it went up in the 50s? 58?
1958,
in
yes.
300 years, yeah. I'd say it's probably a little bit higher up than regular. Other satellites.
Well, there are approximately 23,000 pieces of space debris that are larger than a softball.
Oh, bigger than...
Bigger than like this.
Wow.
So for those of you listening, just imagine us holding up our hands in a circle. and they're traveling at 17,500 miles per hour.
Right. Because you got to get into the orbit.
You have to get into that orbital speed. So at that speed, debris that's like as small as like a speck of paint that's come off something can cause actual damage to a spacecraft up there.
Yeah.
So it's like a little bullet coming at you.
Yeah, one of the things that I heard was that a ball bearing that is like an inch across, mm-hmm. an inch or two across, it has enough energy at that speed that it would be like being hit by a Jeep Wrangler going 70 miles an hour.
Wow.
So how much momentum is
that? Why a Jeep Wrangler specifically? These are the questions. These are the questions. These are the tough, hard-hitting questions we ask here on Cosmos with Cosmos.
He probably did a little back-of-the-envelope calculation, and that was the closest car to the mate.
My mom says we'll need to wear hard hats outside. No wonder they may reconsider first contact. We're going to be the garbage planet. Yeah, I wonder, like, I mean, I guess everything, a lot of stuff is pretty small. There's 500,000 pieces of debris that are the size of a marble or larger. And so, but I don't think if you're looking at the Earth from the outside, maybe it looks like a garbage planet.
Oh, no, you wouldn't see it.
Because everything is pretty spaced out, but things are tiny, so it wouldn't look like a blanket of
But these are really small. You're not seeing them anyway. It you know...
That's fair. I guess you want to see that speck of paint.
You're not going to see something that's like the size of a... If you're driving down the road and somebody drops a bolt off a bridge, you're not going to see it until it's pretty much going to hit your windshield.
Okay, that's fair. It's like whatever that rock was that hit the windshield. Yeah,
but if they drop a softball, you'll see that a little bit further out. If you're a mile down the road, you're not going to see that.
Yeah, you see like mainly just like our larger satellites.
Yeah, and even then. You know, I mean, think about those being about the size of a truck.
We're not at the point yet where it's just a cacophony of just debris.
We're not Wall-E yet.
Wall-E.
Yeah. Which was going to be my dream. The Wall-E feature or something like that. I don't know, but.
Yeah.
So it's not like that yet. But we're working on it.
We're working on it. But it's not like all the stuff that's out there that, you know, NASA and these other agencies are just like, whatever, we don't care about it. A lot of it is, or a good chunk of it's being tracked, or some of it at least is being tracked. And then they can determine based on its speed and orbital decay, they can predict kind of if it's going to run into something else, and then they can maneuver things out of the way. Like, most importantly, the International Space Station, which at least once a year, it has to maneuver out of the way of something.
But in getting ready for this, I realized I said I wasn't going to get ready for this.
Yeah, he said he was not going to prepare at all because I'm running the show, so he doesn't have to do anything.
but then I did do some stuff. Not a lot. I did do some stuff. But one of the things I saw that was in 2011, they discovered that a piece of debris was on a collision course for International Space Station. And actually... It wasn't a direct collision course. It's gonna be close. It's gonna be real close. And it's a game of chicken. And the astronaut was very diplomatic. He said, for some reason, we didn't know this thing was coming. And so very nice of him to say that, because it sounds like the implication to me was we should have fucking known that thing was coming.
Okay.
But anyway. They at least found out before, and this is in 2011, the astronauts had to go get in the Soyuz. It was shelter in place. It was...
Oh, that's terrifying.
Yeah, it was... you have to get in your suit, you have to buckle in, you have to be prepared to immediately cut.
That's a lifeboat.
That's a lifeboat.
I read that, too, that's one of, like, one of the procedures is if an impact of a certain size is probable... then they have to either get into the Soyuz or the US version and lock themselves in and use those as lifeboats until either the danger passes or if it hits, they can see what the damage is. And
yeah, because Soyuz can drop really quick. They can cut the connection really quick. And the thought was that this was big enough to where it could destroy ISS. Now, when we say destroy, it doesn't mean it hits it and the thing explodes.
Is it just like the movie, your favorite space movie ever?
Gravity?
It's okay.
But it did pass, but it passed by less than a football field in length. Less than 100 yards.
That's
it was terrifyingly close.
My mom says Elon's descendants will create a space garbage truck.
Well, somebody needs to.
Elon's already contributed to space junk by having a fucking car just now hanging out in orbit around the sun. I mean, that's not useful for anybody. That's a huge piece of junk.
But isn't it in orbit around the sun?
Yes.
Oh, did you say that? Okay. I was trying to suppress a cough.
I said that. Now, there... Yes, Katie.
Yes.
There is something that has... Basically, astronomers have kind of realized that this could be a problem at the early ages of the space age. You know, within 20 years of the space age, they were kind of like, you know, things are going to start collecting up there. So there is something known as the Kessler syndrome. And it's the phenomenon in which the amount of junk in orbit around Earth reaches a point where it just creates more and more space debris. It's kind of this through collision. So it becomes this kind of like never ending like cycle of just space debris.
A positive feedback loop.
There you go. And that can obviously be very dangerous and cause a lot of issues for, you know, our actual like astronauts and scientific equipment that we're using up there and things like just like GPS units, you know, like you knock out GPS, we're going to have a tough time now.
I mean, we rely on satellites so much with cellular communication, GPS.
Just cough. You ready? Want to get it out?
No. All right. It'll happen when it happens. So on the GPS, but also, I mean, we have the Hubble Space Telescope up there.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay,
I'm sorry.
Okay, we're gonna, don't get ahead of things.
Okay. maybe I should have prepared more.
You should have read further down the notes. But I will highlight Adam. He says there's an anime and manga called Planetes, where the main character is part of a space junk cleaning team. That's fun. Planetes, that's Greek for planet. Or our wandering star. And that's where we get the name planets, because they look like stars that are just meandering across the sky. So, extra bit of star science, space science for you. So far, there are more than 27,000 pieces of orbital debris or space junk that are being tracked by the Department of Defense from 1999 to May 2021. The ISS conducted 29 debris avoiding maneuvers, were three in 2020 alone. Now, here we get into a big issue, and Brandon, maybe it's a good thing he's not here for what I'm about to say, because he would just lose his shit and go on a rant. But SpaceX, SpaceX has launched more than 1,700 satellites for its Starlink broadband constellation, and that could eventually consist of 40,000 or more satellites. Then you have OneWeb that has launched half of its 648 member constellation of satellites. Amazon aims to assemble its own constellation of satellites, which will be more than 3,200 spacecraft. And then Bay Area startup Astra just filed an application with the FCC for its own 13,600 satellite broadband constellation.
Now, to be fair to these companies, they do have avoidance protocol.
They have to.
So there are guidelines. To be fair, it's not like they're just throwing them up there.
One satellite, two satellite.
And they're going to run into each other. They do have avoidance protocols. However, this was brought up in some of the research, is that what they can't predict is that wayward bolt.
Oh, yeah.
That hits it, knocks one out, and then that ends up hitting something else. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so it's, you know, it could be great. It could be terrible at the same time.
Yeah. And you're right, Mom. We're not the only country doing this, okay?
But
all countries.
But like with global warming, we lead the way.
We do lead the way. There's the spacecrafts. There's, you know, space is a hazardous place in itself. Cosmic rays, you know, other forms of radiation out there. So, you know, the spacecraft that are out there, and the, even the ones we use, the ones we don't use, you know, they do suffer this basically erosion, a decay, where stuff wears down, parts may, you know, paint comes flex up, flex off, even if the spacecrafts themselves majorly will stay intact unless they suffer a collision, which will break them apart, you know, but for the most part, they're intact, but you have this wear and tear that happens that lead to those situations where you can't predict, you know, something, a little piece just happens to come off, you know, of a spacecraft. So you know, that causes an issue, and that's why they do work, you know, in combination with NASA, Department of Defense, there's a base in Moscow, you know, that they are tracking these, and they work together to then use those predictions to be able to have these, like, avoidance maneuvers and all that kind of good stuff.
You know, one of the, I like to watch, I do like to watch rocket videos, where the camera is on the rocket.
Nerd.
It's really cool. But if you look at, like, the Apollo, launches. Mm-hmm. So it goes up, and then there's like the iconic Apollo video where you have the separation of the first stage from the second, and that ring just gracefully falls off and rotates and spins and falls off. That's really cool. And if you keep looking at the ring, that's fine. You get to you lose all the other stuff that happens. But if you look off to the sides of the ring, you'll see little flecks of stuff that actually go off as well. And that happens every single time.
Yeah.
And so all of that stuff is going into our, above our atmosphere, into orbit. Mm-hmm. I mean, that stuff is already probably falling back down at this point. But all of that stuff contributes.
Yeah.
So, all right.
Cool. Yeah. So, not only is in this near Earth orbit or low Earth orbit that we have all this junk or, you know, just hanging out by us, but another place we like to send telescopes like the James Webb Space Telescope is the Lagrangian points. And so, James Webb, for example, it is made a home at about 1 million miles from Earth at Lagrangian 2?
L2,
yeah. L2. Lagrangian point L2. L2, hanging out. So it has enough fuel to last for 20 years. 20 years of magnificent science and imagery. But what happens afterwards is that it will move off, and then it will go into orbit around the sun for millions of years. We will have a dead telescope just in orbit around the sun.
Until somebody goes and gets it.
Yeah.
let's just hope that humanity advances to the point where we can just fly out this and just pick it up.
Artifact and put it in the museum.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's just space junk that's then going to be just out there floating around in our solar system.
The good news is it's going around the sun, not us.
That's a good point. I mean, for us,
That's a good point. So, but that it's starting its life out at L2.
Yeah.
And most of these things don't.
No.
So
that's true. Most of it's hanging out with us.
Yeah, it's rare that you actually have something leave Earth.
But we actually have a lot of things that have left Earth that we've deposited elsewhere in the solar system.
And by rare, I mean there's more things here. Well, than,
yes.
So.
Yes. And so moving out, one of those places is, and you've already brought it up, the moon.
The moon.
The moon. We've sent people to the moon. We've sent spacecrafts to the moon. So we've left a lot of shit on the moon's surface.
Yeah. A lot of stuff.
A lot of things. There are hundreds of human-made objects on the moon. Crashed spacecraft, rovers, and then you have, like, TV cameras and golf balls.
And bags of poop.
And bags of... Oh, yeah, I forgot. I forgot about the poop.
Which is also man-made.
Is it? It's, like, frozen...
Poop.
Poop. There's frozen and covered in regolith now, I assume. But
sure. Probably.
Just bags of human feces. On, like, could we not have brought a secondary rocket just to launch it to the sun or something? Like, just.
It's actually more, you spend more energy flying into the sun than you do just flying out. Interesting.
Okay, could we just could we launch it to
going yeah, the other way?
Yeah, it's future fertilizer. Moon poop.
Yeah, but you know, the thing is, I mean, at this point, it's probably not in the bags anymore. I mean, because it's just being slammed with ultraviolet
what
light.
What kind of bags was it in? Do you think?
Oh, I don't know.
Just a poop in a Ziploc bag? Probably not. It's
well, that plastic is going to be, that plastic would be broken down by ultraviolet light, but you also have micrometeorites that are constantly impacting the moon. And so I would say whatever it's in with the combination of micrometeorites and just the ultraviolet radiation, that if it's in any kind of bag, whether it's some sort of fabric or plastic, it's probably going, unless it's in a hard case, it's probably going to be.
So could any of the bacteria in the poop survive to create an alien but not alien moon poop species?
Oh, this is sci-fi in like 1,000 years. This is great.
This is your next. Where instead of Moonshot, the movie, it's Moon Poop.
Moonfall.
Oh, Moonfall. Yeah. Moonfall. Was it Moonfall?
Moonfall. Oh my god.
All right. Anyway,
we've devolved.
Moon poop. So these are instantly all this. Even the poop, I'm assuming, are artifacts. It's not trash. It's not gross. It's artifacts that one day, once you have, you know, people that are commercially going to the moon or whatever, yeah, it could be like looting for hundreds and thousands of dollars. Apollo artifacts. How much is frozen Apollo moon poop going to go for? Who wants to loot that? Loot poop.
Elon Musk just send it, she'll get it.
Oh my god.
He'll be able to afford it.
He'll probably fucking turn it into some like elixir that.
Oh god, that guy.
Anyway. All right, moving out from the moon. Clearly, we got a lot of shit on the moon because we sent people there. We literally have a lot of shit on the moon. But next, Venus.
Oh, Venus, yeah.
Venus. You know, you really don't think about us leaving trash behind or things behind on really anything beyond like the Earth and the Moon, so to speak. You know, you don't really think about, you know, when we've sent spacecrafts to Venus. And the Russians are really good at sending spacecraft to Venus. Shit at sending stuff to Mars. But really good at sending stuff to Venus. Yeah, I don't know really what good. It is about what fucks them up so much with Mars, but
probably the lack of atmosphere.
Oh, maybe that's it. So I was actually really surprised about all the missions that have actually gone to Venus, and actually all the landers that have gone to Venus. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these were part of Russia's Venera missions. There are essentially like 12 landers.
Sure.
Venera 3 through 14, basically.
Okay.
Venera 3 was the first to land on another planet, and when I say land, I mean crashed. So that was not a successful one. Venera 9, this was in 1975, it was the first to take a picture from another, from the surface of another planet, which is really cool. And it's really cool, actually, to look at these pictures. So Google Venera spacecraft images of Venus, and it's really, really interesting. But the Venera 7 and onward, so Venera 7 through 14, the cores of the landers were made using titanium. Now, titanium has a melting point at 2,900 degrees Fahrenheit.
Okay.
So that means that the landers could still be intact on the surface of Venus. It's so hot on the surface of Venus. It's like at 900 degrees Fahrenheit on the surface of Venus. It's so hot on Venus. And I'm going to say this for every time we talk about Venus. So get used to it. But you could cook a large pizza in 9 seconds.
9 seconds.
9 fucking seconds.
Yeah, but so it's not just temperature.
Yeah, they're crushing pressures from the thick atmosphere made of carbon dioxide. It rains fucking acid.
Sulfuric acid.
So it's not a friendly place to visit. But these spacecraft, which you would think would melt under, you know, the extreme heat, don't actually. So they could still be on the surface, just litter the surface with Veneeras. It's
so close to Venero.
I'm trying to. I was going to make a
venereal, Russian STDs.
I was going to make a venereal kind of joke. But another mission was ours, the Pioneer mission. There were basically four probes that were deployed into Venus's atmosphere in 1978. The windows on these probes were made of diamonds and sapphires, which can serve, which can withstand the heat
and the pressure.
And the pressure. So you have jewels. Expensive ass jewels littering the surface of Venus.
Of Venus, yeah.
Which is amazing, which is really cool. And Jack, you're right. Yeah, there will not be a big reaction to Apollo poop tardigrades on the moon, because Brandon's not here.
No. But we may set aside time for his editorial next time when he joins us.
Yeah, maybe. We'll give him that
give
space.
Give him 1 minute.
All right, so Venus has litter. Venus has space junk hanging out from him. Hanging out on it, thanks to us and primarily the Russians. Next planet,
Mars.
Good old Mars.
Good old Mars.
We like sending shit to Mars.
And we're good at it now.
Not real shit yet, but
no, but we'll get there eventually. Be, what about Mark Watney, the Martian?
Yeah,
he had it.
Not real.
He's real. That was a documentary. That was a documentary.
That was a documentary. Yeah. All right, so in a few of these landers that have not necessarily been successful on Mars, that are just like debris essentially that's been wasted. You have Mars 2 and Mars 3. Those are from Russia. The Mars Climate Orbiter, which was caused from a math error. One team used English feet and pounds. The other used metric. And then there was a big like, oh shit.
Somebody didn't
convert. Someone didn't convert properly. So that's fun. Beagle 2 is New Zealand's? Or
no,
UK?
Beagle 2 is UK.
UK. Beagle, Darwin.
Yeah.
There's a Schiaparelli lander from the Trace Gas Orbiter and the Mars Polar Lander.
Which was University of Arizona.
Okay. Yeah. So you have these crash landers that are just debris on the surface of Mars. But then you have successful landers like Spirit and Opportunity, Curiosity, Perseverance. And so you have parachutes that are just laying on the surface, heat shields, and sky cranes from Curiosity and Perseverance, which is a phenomenal feat in engineering and this amazing way to land spacecrafts on Mars successfully. But the problem, though, and the concern with the sky cranes is so once they let the rover go, they fly off and they crash elsewhere, hundreds of feet away, right? But there's still leftover rocket fuel in the sky cranes. And so the concern is that if that fuel then leaks out for some reason, you know, say when it crashed, it gets a hole, and you know, that they don't attend or whatever. If it leaks out, then it can contaminate the Martian soil.
Yeah, if there's any life there.
If there's any life there, then it's going to...
I mean, the good news is that contamination will stay local, like right there.
Yeah, in that area.
But it's not good for any life that might be there. But speaking of like all of the parachute and all this kind of stuff, there's NASA recently, last week or so, it's been a long couple weeks, released...
What are weeks? What is time?
Yeah. Released pictures from Ingenuity. Has actually taken pictures of Perseverance's...
The heat shield and the parachute. Just on the surface of Mars.
Taking pictures of our litter.
Yeah, like, look, you guys. Yep. And so, I mean, I would say, of course, these are now all artifacts. You know, these are, you know, whatever, World Heritage Sites, whatever they're called to, you know, preserve that or to make them
solar
like
system heritage sites.
The solar system, there we go, solar system heritage sites. So not not considered litter, but basically it's litter. It's basically trash. It's just, it's our junk that we're not using anymore. It's just,
but there's historical
value
connections to it, mm-hmm. and all of that.
But we're not done with our litter in the solar system.
Oh, but we're not even done with Mars. Like, when the first time, it's not on there.
Okay.
But I told you earlier, the Viking.
Oh, right.
The Viking,
right,
yeah. The Viking landers in 1976, when they landed on Mars, the first thing they did was shoot off a canister. The first thing we did, we basically exported America to Mars in the 1970s, where the first thing that our spacecraft did was litter. Shooting off a canister.
I don't need this anymore. Throw my trash out the window as I drive down the
road. I'm here. America has arrived.
we make claims to our yes. litter. Just like.
And then, so in the PSA, is like a little Martian who's crying, looking at the letter.
Sarah McLachlan playing in the background. In the arms of. Please don't ruin our planet.
Yeah. All right. We're not done.
Keep Mars clean.
All right.
Anyway. All right. Moving on.
Moving on.
Way out there in the deep reaches of our solar system, but not that deep considering the size of our solar system, but getting there, there is a moon, the largest moon.
That's no moon.
Of Saturn, Titan. And we sent spacecrafts.
It was a Star Wars reference.
Oh, I said, shit. It was Star Wars. Boom. Okay, there it goes. I was like, why isn't it strobing? Fucked up. All right. So Titan, the largest moon of Saturn, we have sent spacecrafts to this moon. We've sent landers to Saturn, most famously the Huygens. Huygens.
How are you going to say it?
Huygens.
How are you going to say it?
Huygens?
No, you sounded like you were going to say Huygens.
No. Huygens, which was on the Cassini orbiter. And,
sorry.
And it descended onto the surface of Titan. So now mm-hmm. it's just hanging out on Titan. You have the presumed, I like the presumed defunct probes, Pioneer 10. Was launched in 1972. And then Huygens, it's the size of, by the way, it's the size of two refrigerators. Two refrigerators worth of human engineering sitting on the surface. And it's made of aluminum, and it rains liquid methane mm-hmm. on Titan, but the methane doesn't react with aluminum. So the shell of Huygens would still be intact.
Does anything really react with aluminum?
I don't know, because I don't know my chemistry.
I mean, it's got to react with something. It's not like it's a noble gas or anything. So,
I like this idea. Roomba. We need a bigger vacuum cleaner, since my mom, Jack, suggests a space Roomba, a stellar Roomba. Yeah, we could just bring a Roomba to all the planets, and it'll just go, and, you know.
Yeah. I know,
or just
right?
get a giant comb, and just, I was like, space balls. But that doesn't really clean stuff up. All right. Moving on. Or in space balls. They have, it turns into the maid, the vacuum cleaner.
Yeah.
With the vacuum cleaner.
And yeah. Just,
okay. Anyway. All right. We're going out even further. We're going interstellar litter.
Interstellar
litter. Pioneer 10.
You know, for some reason, I thought you were talking about the movie. That is what went in my head immediately.
No.
Was, oh, she's going to say something about the movie.
No,
I know, but.
Okay. Pioneer 10, launched in 1972, flew past Jupiter in 1973, and it's headed in the direction of Aldebaran, which is the eye of Taurus the Bull. It's orange eye and towards the bull, 65 light years away.
Okay.
So cool. It takes 65 years for light to travel from Aldebaran to us. Not so bad, not so far in the scheme of things, right?
Older to me.
We lost contact with Pioneer 10 in 2003. It's estimated to have passed 120 AUs, astronomical units.
Which is what?
One astronomical unit is 93 million miles, the distance between the Earth and the Sun.
So it's over 10 billion miles from here.
So it's...
far.
Yeah, it's far. It's far away. So, and it's useless to us now. So it's just junk heading out there. Then we have Pioneer 11. It was launched in 1973. It flew past Jupiter in 1974 and Saturn in 1979. You were 10. Contact was lost in 1995 when I was 10. And estimated to be at around 100 AU right now. It's headed towards the constellation of Aquila the Eagle. Barring any incidents. I don't know what incidents it would have.
Klingons,
okay. So,
Didn't you see the movie Star Trek episode? It was Star Trek, motion picture.
No, when they captured this telescope, it's the flute. It was the flute episode with Picard and that satellite. Wasn't Voyager. I didn't say.
Okay, go ahead.
I don't know what's happening anymore. Anyway, okay. Barring an incident, Pioneer 11 will pass near one of the stars in the constellation in about 4 million years.
Hey, give or take.
Yeah, 4 million years, our trash of a spacecraft will reach another star in another constellation.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yep, and...
Klingons hang around Uranus.
4 million years is not that long in grand scheme
of
things.
No, that's sure. Just half
humanity
the sun's
will not life. Be here. No. No. But it is... Most likely. The sun will still be here, but humanity won't.
All right, so we got two spacecrafts.
Got two.
We've littered the universe with. Voyager 2. Famous Voyager 2. Launched August 1977. Flew past Jupiter in 1979. Saturn in 1981. Uranus in 1986. And November in 1989. And we haven't had a spacecraft go back to Uranus or Neptune since. Come on!
NASA actually a spacecraft for Uranus past NASA plans. So they might be sending something to Uranus.
I gotta do it. Are they gonna probe Uranus?
All right, move on.
All right. So Voyager 2... still active, it left the heliosphere for interstellar space, so it left the influence of the sun, basically, which is the boundary between our solar system and space, the final fucking frontier, in 2018.
Yeah.
Okay. It's still good. It's not headed towards anything in particular. It's
just cruising.
It's just cruising. It's just joyriding. Out in interstellar space right now. In roughly 40,000 years, it should pass 1.7 light years from the star Ross 248. I wonder if Rachel will be nearby.
Oh my God. Seriously?
What are the chances I could slip in a Friends joke in any of these episodes? All right, so... Voyager 2 will pass by 1.7 light years by close to the star in 40,000 light years. But if it remains undisturbed.
40,000 years.
40,000 years.
Take a breath.
Okay.
Take a breath.
What's happening? Okay. I'm really excited about this because I find it fascinating.
It is fascinating.
If it remains undisturbed.
Okay.
By what have you. For 296,000 years. If no one bothers it for 296,000 years, it'll pass by the star Sirius, the brightest star in our nighttime sky in the constellation of Canis Major.
Seriously?
But at a distance of 4.3 light years. So it'll get 4.3 light years close to Sirius, which I'm thinking of something else, but yeah.
This is fun just watching you do this.
My brain is trying to move faster than all right so we got Voyager 2 out there, so we got 3. Voyager 1 Now Voyager 1.
Now Voyager 1.
Launched in September of 1977, flew past Jupiter in 79 and Saturn in 1980. And then it was like, I got a boogie out of here. I don't have time for any of these other planets.
Yeah, but that was by design.
Yes. And so it, in 2012, it entered interstellar space. It left our solar system for the great beyond. It's still active, so we're still getting signals from it. Little ET phone homes here and there, just little like, boop, I'm doing okay, here's where I'm at.
Very faint, little beep beeps.
Yeah, just like, can you hear me?
NASA's deep, deep space network.
NASA. It is headed towards an encounter.
An encounter.
You're gonna hit it? With the star Gliese 445, which lies 17.6 light years from Earth. And it'll have this encounter in about 40,000 years.
Nice. Humanity won't be here. We won't be here. I have no hope.
40,000 years. What will the alien? My mom wants to know, what will the aliens find when they capture it or whatever spacecraft we send out there?
Well, I think they see it. Just
say this. They'll find this. I mean, the spacecraft is going to be largely intact. I mean, it's not. I mean, there's radiation and stuff that'll decay some parts of it or whatever, but I mean, there's nothing unless it hits something or whatever. It's just gonna be a.
The aliens are gonna find a roadmap directly here.
Well, they find Voyager.
That's Voyager, right?
Well, I mean, yes.
Weren't we talking about Voyager?
Which one's the gold record on? One or two?
Is it on both of them?
Is it on both of them?
I think isn't it on both of them? Don't we have? We have.
They're gonna find a picture. Map. They will find a picture of
naked
two
people.
Horribly drawn naked people. They should have let me draw it, because it would just be like the stick figures, and then the aliens would be very confused. And then just like a map of like, boop, here's where we are. You can find us here. Come take all of our resources.
How would you have drawn a difference between men and women?
Women, they have the triangle because they're wearing a dress. But the guys, it's just a stick figure. It's naked. But you can't add little shorts to it. That's how I draw. I didn't get the artist gene. You want the artist gene? Check out Wild Ixia. Wild IXIA. You can go to her Etsy page.
Yeah,
Etsy, buy her shit. She can draw shit. I can't. That's not.
The great thing was that when Liz was making storyboards for some of our shows. She really did put stick figures, which I said was absolutely fine because it just conveys how things are and what's on the dome and all that kind of stuff. And no, she put the little stick figures in there. It was great. I think we still have those.
We do have them somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. All right.
What else we got?
Last one. New Horizons.
New friggin' Horizons.
New Horizons launched in 2006. It flew by Pluto, giving us like the best pictures of Pluto we've ever had, ever. Better.
What happened in 2006? Oh, launched in 2006. Okay.
It launched, and then after many years, once it arrived at Pluto in 2015.
2006 was a pivotal year for Pluto. It got demoted.
Oh.
You launched New Horizons.
Yeah.
Cool.
Never forget.
It's the fastest one too.
It's super fast because it's powered by plutonium.
How excited you are about that.
So it flew past this Kuiper Belt object, whatever, just a bullshit name, on 2019. Okay, it's 486-958 Arrokoth. On the 1st of January 2019, Happy New Year, everybody. As part of this like extended Kuiper Belt mission, and I don't know what other plans they have for it, but eventually,
it might be free now at this point.
Yeah, eventually. I mean, it's just gonna also head out into interstellar space and just be another bit of debris we have floating out into the universe.
Because that's what we do.
That's what we do.
We pollute.
It's how we make our mark.
We don't make our mark on advancing knowledge in any kind of way. We pollute.
Just sending our shit out.
That's what we do.
So, I mean, do you think that that most of this stuff is like artifacts versus junk, or do you think most of the stuff is, if we're not using it, it's not contributing anything, is it more junk?
Well, okay, it depends on what it is. If you have a bolt that is just kind of floating around in low Earth orbit.
Junk.
It is junk. However, if this has contributed in some way to our understanding of the universe or exploration
of perseverance.
Or anything on the surface of the moon from the Apollo mission.
The dead husk of Huygens.
Yes, these things are artifacts. These have historical connections to them. They played a part of the historical narrative of us. And so I think they're artifacts. But like I said, if it's a bolt, that's just junk. But whether it is, let's be honest, if it is in low Earth orbit, whether it is junk or an artifact, it doesn't matter if it imperils the astronauts on ISS. If it imperils Hubble, that could be debated. But when it starts to imperil life, and these things do, there are pictures of parts of the International Space Station where they have been hit by little tiny things. We're not even talking big things. We're talking about little flecks of paint and things like that. And it makes a crater, like in the solar panels and things like that. There is a picture of an astronaut's glove that had been hit with something, and it had ripped it. And
were
so
they wearing it?
They were wearing it. Yeah. At that point, it doesn't matter if it's an artifact or if it's junk. And we do need to figure something out.
Is there a way that we can manufacture some of the stuff so that it has less wear and tear or less things that can break off of it?
Yeah, it all comes down to engineering. Where you can engineer something at the end of its life to where... So the atmosphere basically expands and contracts depending on the activity from the sun. And if it expands, that causes more drag and things can come in.
Decay.
Right. And so there's ways that you can engineer so that decay happens quicker. The scary part is when you have one spacecraft run into another spacecraft.
Right. Because then it's a whole bunch of other
You have debris issues. That that goes out. And this debris, these destroyed satellites, that debris will encircle the Earth. So you have this ring of debris. Mm-hmm. But what we have found is that ring of debris does not stay a ring. It actually expands. So it gets taller. And so that increases your chance of something flying into it and then having it get hit and
then you broken up and Kessler destroyed. Syndrome of just
before you know it, you're in the Kessler syndrome. And all this bullshit about countries going, hey, let's blow up other countries' satellites, you're not helping anyone. So we have blown up a couple of satellites. Mm-hmm. It's not like the U.S. is hands off on this.
China.
In fact, no, the Russians were the first to do it, I think.
Russia, China, and Russia, us were the big.
Russians
we're
did
like
it.
We're the top three.
We did it. Then China did it. And then to prove a point, we did it again after China did
just
it.
Just get out the tape measure,
and
folks.
So,
Jesus.
I know. So it's a real pissing contest. But what it does is it endangers the art. The citizens that we have up there, Russians have Russians up there. Mm-hmm. We have Americans up there. Mm-hmm. The Chinese are putting Chinese people there. And so, I mean, you can, in an extreme case, China blows up a satellite. That satellite debris then knocks out International Space Station.
And then Sandra Bullock has to find her way home because George Clooney has been lost to space.
Yeah, or with this extreme scenario... it kills astronauts that are up there, does the, let's say it kills U.S. astronauts, does the U.S. say we're going to declare war on China because this is an unprovoked attack?
We tend to get into it once we're hit with something, so.
Or the other way around.
Yeah.
Like, we blow up a satellite and knocks out a Chinese space station because they do have one that might be active or they're trying to make it active. And so does China take that personally, declare war on us, or declare war on Taiwan because they know it'll pull us in?
Okay, so basically, don't blow satellites up. That's a bad.
It's a bad thing.
Are there any plans to clean anything up?
No, there's no plans. I mean, the idea is that you put stuff in low Earth orbit, it does its thing. It decays, it falls into the earth.
Burns up. But, like, whatever that one thing was, I mean, it's going to take 300 years for that spacecraft.
Yeah, so that's higher up. Okay. That's higher up. But so what you're doing is you are putting stuff in the lower levels. It burns up, but that is the easiest place to get to. So you're constantly putting stuff up there. And not only that, you then have the stuff in the higher levels, they're decaying, so they're coming down.
To the lower levels.
Yeah, and the lower levels is where you have the International fucking Space Station. It's not like the International Space Station is way up there.
No, because you got to get people back.
Yeah. And so, good news, things are burning up in the atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
Bad news is the rate in which we're adding things is greater than the rate in which things are decaying.
Okay.
So
this seems pretty on brand for our species.
Yeah, and so whereas people like the U.S., Russia, European Space mm-hmm. Agency, they have plans on, okay, if we launch things, this is the decay, the future of it. Like James Webb Space Telescope running out of fuel in 20 years, it just going and moving on out
mm-hmm.
and going in orbit around the sun is by design.
Yeah.
And so it's not going to impact the Earth, at least anywhere in the near future.
Why don't they have it like go into the sun?
Because it takes more energy. It actually takes more energy, believe it or not, to shoot something into the sun than it does just to shoot it out.
Okay.
So, yeah.
But it's already heading in orbit around the sun, so couldn't we just plan a decayed orbit so it falls into the sun? I'm leading this line of questioning because I would like a Viking sun burial. Now that I think about it. I originally, if that can't be done, please mummify me.
Alright, well, we'll see what we can do.
I want a sarcophagus and everything. Wait
a minute, so you want Vikings and Egyptians?
No, but yes, but I'm saying if I can't get a Viking sun burial.
Oh. Mummified?
Mummified has been my top.
Well, you know tier I want to be. You know I want to be. I want to be burnt up. So
yes.
Viking me.
Well, yeah, yeah. Bring it with me, obviously.
Okay.
You know,
anyway, let's get back to James Webb.
Okay.
James Webb is further out from the Earth, from the Sun than the Earth.
Yes.
So if you want to make it go in towards the Sun, you're gonna have to cross the Earth's orbit, which means you have a chance of it hitting the Earth.
Oh, okay.
So it's best to do it out. Unless that you figure out the orbital mechanics.
Yeah.
So that, I mean, let's be honest, going into the sun would be really cool.
Yeah. Katie, yes, no, we do want to jump into a volcano together, but I'm saying the volcano thing doesn't work out. My main thing is a mummification. But if you want to throw in the pyramid, Mom, I'm cool with that. I'll take a pyramid with like a labyrinth inside.
Do we have?
And I want canopic jar. I want the hole through the nose. Just salt me up.
Do we have our servants go in with us?
Well, that would be that would be what Jack and Leia in winter. So we'll just pre-mummify them, I guess, and then.
We should anyway. And at Halloween, we just put them out.
I mean, my family has a tradition of cremating our pets and keeping mm-hmm. them. So this is just a different level to that. Sure you will, Mom. You'll live forever. Because it's Mother's Day. All right. So
You're in charge.
In a nutshell, we have a lot of junk out there, a lot of debris. I mean, if it's junk versus artifacts, I think I'm in agreement of you that, like, your stray bolt and your flexipane and all that miscellany, you know, is really junk. You know, but things that are like on the moon, on planets, on Titan, are heading out into interstellar space. Things that have been a part of our story of space exploration, our advancements as a species, and our understanding of science. you know, those are artifacts and worth it. Lizarita comes to mind. Yeah, that's what I'll be.
All right, cool.
I want that on my on our tombstone.
Oh, okay. As you gotta add it to the list.
I gotta add it. We have a list of tombstone sayings. Just salt me up as I'm mummified in the I have it on my sarcophagus.
Yep. Just salt me up. Just
salt me up.
Isn't there like a? It seemed like that there's a. But we could get the Rolling Stones song. Just start me up, but change the lyrics so it's just salt me up. Just whenever somebody opens the sarcophagus, that plays.
Well, they're not just salt me up. They're not supposed to open it. Whenever they open the tomb.
Yeah, but no.
If they find the tomb, then it'll be a whole production.
But they always open it.
That's true. I mean, that's the goal of the mummification is in like 12,000 years, future archaeologists, they find and then they... But then it's, they get it's ruined by the digital age. Unless they get that's cursed. Still, anyway, yes, a curse. I need a curse. Okay. Anyway. All right. There's a lot of shit out there. As a species, we got to figure out how to not leave debris that can be harmful to future missions, to science, and to people that we send out there.
People are thinking about this,
some people are thinking about this. I don't think it's on the list of priorities of, I think it's like, asteroid mitigation.
Yeah.
And then maybe space junk is a little further down because we're not reaching any kind of Kessler syndrome or whatever for a long time. I mean, really, we're thinking like decades or.
Well, I mean, but decades is not far.
That's
off.
True, but like it's not like we're not really on like the cusp of it yet.
No, but asteroids impact more people than a bolt. Asteroids impact more people impacting the Earth than a softball-sized thing hitting the International Space Station.
Maybe we could take all of the space debris and I don't know, magnets or whatever, use it and make a shield. And then the asteroid can impact that and it'll slow it down or it'll do something. And it can be the debris shield. I don't know.
I say we take all of it and destroy it, Putin. Destroy it at his house.
He's on the Earth, though, so that's going to cost.
Yeah, but it just hits his house.
Okay,
or we can just throw it at all the people that are excited about the impending. All
right, we don't need it. Well, let's still avoid all of the normal. We have the hangover to come, so stick around with us for the hangover, which is only found on YouTube. But for now. Thank you, everyone, for joining us on
this episode in 2 weeks.
Of Cosmos with Cosmos.
We know what our topic's going to be. Misconceptions in astronomy.
Yay! In 2 weeks. Is the moon made of cheese?
No, but it'd be cool if it were.
I was going to say join us and find out.
Okay. Join us.
Just and ignore find what out. I said.
It's made of cheese.
But for now, thank you guys for joining us. Follow us on all the things at Drinking Cosmos on Twitter, Cosmos with Cosmos. Everywhere else, pick up your fucking litter
and recycle. Don't throw it in space.
Reuse, recycle. Was it there? Recycle, reuse. I don't know. But be kind to the planet. Be kind to everybody else out there. Stay safe and stay healthy.
Cheers, everybody.
We'll see ya.
Bye.